We have three cases scheduled for oral argument today. And we're ready with the first, Jenkins versus MSPB, 17-2193. Mr. Frumkin, you have reserved 3 minutes of your time for rebuttal. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Mr. Jenkins was denied MSPB jurisdiction, yet all agree that but for the agency's unilateral cancellation of its final decision to remove him, the Board would have had jurisdiction under 7701J and this Court's decision in Mays. But because the agency here uniquely conditioned its cancellation upon Mr. Jenkins' retirement.
What do you mean by uniquely? Isn't that a fairly common thing for an agency to say to an employee, we can have a deal here. There can be a black mark on your record, and you'll go through the removal, and if you lose, there'll be a black mark on the record, but you can avoid that, get the benefit of avoiding that for future employment if you retire.
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, we believe that this particular type of conditional cancellation has never been before this Court, and we have not seen it come before the Board in a precedential decision. Perhaps in practice, this is something that agencies are doing, but we submit that if an agency has already issued a final removal decision and then conditionally cancels that removal decision upon an employee's retirement, there's no way around running headlong into Section 7701J. Now, perhaps in this case...
Well, why is that? I mean, I guess I took Cooper, which involves somewhat different facts, but nevertheless, to say 7701J says that the Board cannot make essentially a jurisdictional determination based specifically on a removal, I mean on a retirement. But Cooper says what happened there was it was based on the cancellation. How you got to the cancellation is essentially irrelevant. That the cancellation had something to do with the retirement is a matter for the agency, but not for the Board's restriction under 7701J.
Your Honor, I believe that how you get to the cancellation does matter, and it has to matter because of the express congressional intent behind 7701. We know, as this Court has articulated in Mays, that the whole purpose of 7701 is to enable an employee who was eligible to, at that time, take his earned annuity benefits and retire, to do so and still challenge his removal decision.
Tell us why your situation is closer to Mays as opposed to our case in Cooper.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that in every material respect, our case is identical to Mays, but for the unilateral cancellation. In Cooper, the significant difference there was that the employee was fired. He was removed. He left his job because he had to, because he was fired. A long time thereafter, Mr. Cooper voluntarily applied for disability benefits, which were granted. And at some time thereafter, the agency decided to substitute its final removal decision for a grant of disability benefits. So, first of all, Mr. Cooper's retirement was concededly voluntary. And second of all, Mr. Cooper wasn't faced with the situation that Mr. Jenkins was, which is the very situation 7701 was designed to prevent. I am an employee, and my agency wants to fire me. In fact, in this case, the agency already has told me they've fired me. I am entitled to take my retirement benefits now, when I want to, and still have the ability to challenge my removal decision. Whatever the government's motive here, perhaps as you suggest, Judge Toronto, the government was
What if the decision to fire is canceled before your retirement and all mention of the matter is removed from the record?
Your Honor, we believe that if there is a connection between the employee's decision to retire and the agency's cancellation of the removal decision, that has implications for 7701. This Court in Mays has already said that The timing of the retirement with respect to either before a removal or after a removal is of no moment. 7701 applies in either event.
So in this case, the administrative law judge did consider Mays versus Cooper and made a decision. I'd like for you to look at that decision and tell me exactly, in your view, what the error is.
Well, Your Honor, the error we submit is twofold. First of all, as we believe the government concedes, the judge erred by misinterpreting Mays to prohibit an employee's ability from retiring before the effective date of a removal, and deciding that it was the effective date of a removal that can strip the board of jurisdiction. The government agrees with us that Mays squarely held that it's not the effective date of a removal that matters, as long as there's been a finally issued removal decision. So where does that leave us? Effectively, we believe the administrative judge looked at Mays and looked at Cooper and decided that Cooper controlled. There's not a lot of analysis on this point in the decision below, but this is, we submit, a somewhat novel issue of law. And whether or not Cooper applies has to be governed, in our view, by the very purpose of 7701. So an employee like Mr. Jenkins, who has worked for long enough to have earned the ability to immediately retire and take annuity benefits when he wants, under 7701, is allowed to do that and still challenge his decision, his removal decision. And the government in this case, whether or not they were trying to help him out by giving him a way out of a blemish on his record, the consequence of that decision was that they prevented Mr. Jenkins from doing both of those things.
But he could have. Why couldn't he have contested the merits on the spot? He could have, couldn't he?
You're right, Judge Wallach, that he could have, but to do that, he would have had to forfeit his right to retire at that time. And we submit that, first of all, he was coerced.
He could have stood up and said, you're wrong.
We believe that he was coerced and misinformed, so his ability to do that was very limited. But we also believe that a reasonable employee in his position would feel at least some pressure to retire.
Can I just one point? If he had delayed his retirement by 2 days, then, in fact, the thing would not have been canceled. The removal would have gone forward as a 7512 appealable adverse action, and so he could have had the benefit of retirement and the benefit of having a board appeal, but without the benefit of eliminating any possibility of a black mark. So he didn't forfeit his ability to retire. At most, he forfeited 2 days' worth of retirement.
But, Your Honor, first of all, we believe that that choice was not a real one, that he was pressured.
But that's a separate issue, right? I mean, everybody agrees that he has the right to try to prove that the retirement was essentially coerced or based on some sort of misrepresentation or by omission or commission. So that's not at issue. You're trying to get to the, basically, as I understand it, the merits of the PIP ground in either of two ways, by there being an actual removal or there being a constructive removal through involuntary retirement. And so far we've been talking almost entirely about the actual removal. Nobody doubts that if you could prove involuntary retirement, then you get to the merits of the PIP removal, right, and the PIP ground.
That's right, Your Honor. But we believe that it's not
possible. That's performance improvement plan, right, PIP.
Correct. Mr. Jenkins would like to challenge the merits of his removal, and he was not allowed the ability to do that. We believe that Your Honor's suggestion that Mr. Jenkins could have just waited 2 days or 1 day and retired after the fact of his removal, and then he could have had his cake and eaten it too, is not a valid reason to deny the application of 7701, because Mays directly held that 7701 applies whether or not an employee retires before or after their removal.
Right, but then Cooper came back and said, if the removal has been canceled, 7701J doesn't apply anymore.
Cooper came after Mays and said, in the event of a cancellation as presented in that case, 7701 was not a problem. But Cooper also specifically took pains to note why that was not a problem. Part of the reason that it was not a problem was that Mr. Cooper voluntarily retired, and the retirement and the subsequent cancellation of the removal decision were unconnected. So the board had no problem in saying, we're not going to consider the fact of his retirement in denying jurisdiction here. We're just going to consider that the decision was canceled. And the board was able to do that separately. In this case, not only did the board explicitly consider the status of Mr. Jenkins' retirement on page 6 of the initial decision in an express violation of the statute, but we believe that the board was forced to do that. The primary piece of evidence in this case to suggest that Mr. Jenkins' removal decision was canceled is the letter, what we refer to as the letter in our briefs, the letter of conditional cancellation. And if you look at that letter, all over the letter, it talks about if you retire, your retirement.
My problem with your argument is, in essence, any choice is coercion. If you give someone a choice to do something, and one benefits them more than the other, and they say, I'll take that choice, they can also say, I was coerced because the other choice wasn't as good, in my opinion.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that this case doesn't need to be decided on the basis of coercion.
I understand, but you've argued coercion all the way through this brief.
That's true, Your Honor, but coercion specifically applies to Mr. Jenkins' separate contention that his retirement was involuntary. Your Honor doesn't need to find that Mr. Jenkins was actually coerced in order to agree with us.
So you're abandoning coercion?
We would not certainly abandon coercion, Your Honor, but we believe that what Mr. Jenkins was really afforded the right here to do and what was denied by the board was the right to, like Ms. Mays and any other employee who's issued a final removal decision, challenge the merits of that decision. And Mr. Jenkins simply wasn't allowed the right to do that.
So what happens if we agree with you? We reverse and remand?
Correct, Your Honor. If you agree with us on the merits point that we have been discussing, we believe the proper recourse would be reversal, remand, to allow an adjudication on the merits of his removal, to allow Mr. Jenkins to present evidence and testimony related to the merits of the removal.
And that's just the PIP, because he's abandoned all the discrimination issues. Otherwise, we don't have jurisdiction if he hasn't abandoned them.
Correct, Your Honor. He has abandoned the discrimination issues.
Okay, you're out of time. So let's hear from the other side.
Thank you.
Attorney Kilfoy,
yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. In our view, this case is directly governed by the court's decision in Cooper versus Department of the Navy. As with Mr. Jenkins, an agency canceled a removal decision based on a petitioner's retirement. Although Mr. Jenkins contends that these two events were unconnected in Cooper, in fact, the reason that the agency canceled his removal there is that Mr. Cooper's disability retirement application was approved. If you look at that decision, that's the reason that they canceled it. And this court held that when a removal decision has been canceled, 7701J is not implicated. The fact that the removal has been canceled and rather than the petitioner's retirement status is the basis for finding that the board lacks jurisdiction over the appeal.
How would you describe the congressional intent here? I realize there's not very much to go on, but there's, a sentence or a paragraph or something in the committee report of whatever that was, 1990, that says something about the need for this provision to make sure that – finish that sentence. Make
right.
sure that what?
Right. I think if the government actually is going to fire you and you have an adverse action on your record, you have a right to appeal that regardless of your retirement status. And if you look at this court's decision in Mays at 27F3D 1580, the court specifically discusses the right of someone stigmatized with an adverse action, like Ms. Mays was, to contest that regardless of whether they retire.
And the stigma, in your view, goes away when essentially your record is cleansed.
Right, and it's undisputed that here the removal action, the removal decision for Mr. Jenkins was canceled and was not part of his official personnel file.
Doesn't that give the government an upper hand in these type of cases? You know, fire somebody and then cancel it and put the employee in a tight spot?
Well, in Cooper, this court addressed that concern because Mr. Cooper raised it, and the court found that the remedy there would to be to bring an involuntary retirement action, which Mr. Jenkins did.
But how can that happen if there's another determination that the board has no jurisdiction anymore?
Well, certainly someone can prove that the board has jurisdiction over an involuntary retirement. And Mr. Jenkins was afforded a five-hour hearing before an MSPB.
Is that what's happening here?
Yes, he was given a five-hour hearing, but ultimately the administration.
So if we find in your favor, then Mr. Jenkins is out.
That's right, because he's already had his involuntary retirement hearing and not prevailed. He hasn't proven by a preponderance of the evidence that his retirement was involuntary.
And one of the grounds of involuntariness is this coercion ground, but put that aside. And let's focus on, let's call it the misinformation ground, either by omission where the omission is misleading or something affirmatively said. Can you address the colloquy on page 19 of the administrative judge's decision, which to me at least has a little bit of the character of those drawings that if you look at one way, looks like, was it the lady in the hat, and the look at the other way, looks like two wine glasses or something. I'm not quite sure what to make of this. Why does that colloquy on Appendix 19 not indicate some misunderstanding fostered by, that is a false statement, or a misleading statement? I was told you could always go ahead and retire and fight this matter through merit systems.
Right, and
when your position is that with this letter, if he retired, he wasn't going to be able to fight it because the cancellation was going to go away.
Well, he's not able to fight it if he retires by March 31st and the agency canceled it. As you said, if he retires with a later effective date and it's not cleared from his record, he can, in fact, retire and appeal it because that was the agency's offer, that if he retired by March 31st, which was his previous.
This statement doesn't make what for you is the critical distinction based on the timing of the retirement. This is you can retire and keep your board cause of action.
Right. As an initial matter, can I just raise that before the Merit Systems Protection Board, Mr. Jenkins's argument was not that his retirement was involuntary because he was told he could retire and appeal it to the MSPB. His argument was that his retirement was involuntary in part because he was not told that he could retire and appeal it to the MSPB. And that's Appendix 365 to 66 and 437 where he's raising those arguments. At his hearing, his representative asked him if he received misinformation or disinformation from the Human Resources Office, and he testified no, he was told he could retire and appeal it to the MSPB. However, even assuming that this court is considering this new argument, our position is that he never testified that he made his choice to retire based on a mistaken belief that he could appeal a case.
No evidence of reliance on this.
Right. There's no evidence that he held that belief at the time that he chose to retire or that he relied on it in making that decision to retire. And, in fact, if you look at his MSPB appeal form at APPX 33, he's checking involuntary retirement as the basis for his appeal, not removal.
This is appendix what page, you said?
33. I'm sorry. It's 33.
Where he checks the box. Is this him? He filled out this form? Is that right?
I believe so. At the time, he didn't have his representative yet at the time, so yes, I would believe he filled it out.
I'm sorry, and what are you pointing to on this?
At APPX 33.
The involuntary retirement box?
Right.
Are you sure he filled this out?
I have no reason to believe that anyone else would have said
okay.
At the time.
It's not something the government would have filled out.
No, the government doesn't fill out your MSPB appeal form for you, but I don't know Mr. Jenkins would have to speak to whether he personally did, but I have no reason to believe it would be anyone.
And, sir, and so what is the point you're making about this?
That he's checking involuntary retirement rather than appealing a removal action. And if you look at APPX 455, which is the summary of pre-hearing conference before the MSPB, there he agrees, according to the administrative judge's notation, that he's only appealing his involuntary retirement and not attempting to appeal his removal for performance reasons.
Right, but are you relying on this to indicate as some evidence of his state of mind back at the time of in March 2012? Because this is 3.5 years later.
The fact that he didn't try to do what we would say shows that he didn't, but we would also say that it's not the MSPB's burden to disprove that he held a mistaken belief and retired in reliance based on that. It's Mr. Jenkins's burden to prove by preponderant evidence that his retirement was involuntary, and he didn't present any evidence that he held this mistaken belief at the time or that he relied on it in making his decision to retire. Finally, I'd just like to address the argument that Mr. Jenkins's retirement was coerced based on the cancellation notice. At the time he received this notice, he had already submitted his retirement application. That's at APPX 37. He submitted it after he received the proposal notice.
And this is like February 23rd or something?
Yes, that's right. And the only evidence in the record based on about the Army's motivation was that this was done to allow him to retire without an adverse action on his record, which is consistent with evidence in the record about other steps that the Army took to try to help Mr. Jenkins to avoid a removal, such as offering him a non-supervisory position at the same grade and rate of pay prior to even proposing his removal, an offer that he did not accept. If there is no other questions, I can answer.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Frumkin, you have 2 minutes and 46 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
In the red brief, the government says, Mr. Jenkins argues that a notation on his final SF-50 that his reason for retirement was to obtain, quote, to obtain retirement benefits, proves that the agency knew that he misunderstood the effect that a removal would have had on his retirement benefits. Why wasn't that raised below, or was it?
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Jenkins below was consistently told by the government that his only argument was to allege involuntary removal. So first, to a lot of...
He was consistently told by whom?
The government's position the entire time was that it was not available to Mr. Jenkins to challenge the merits of the removal itself. So he was limited to involuntary retirement. Mr. Jenkins below was represented by a non-attorney representative, and we submit that these arguments are jurisdictional in nature, and so they could not be waived at this point on appeal. I'd like to address some of the questions Your Honor, Judge Toronto was asking. Mr. Jenkins might have had the ability to wait it out in this case and simply delayed his retirement by a couple of days. But we believe that aside from the fact that that would contradict the holding of Mays to make a distinction on 7701, if this court blesses this practice, there would be nothing to stop an agency from issuing a lawyer-drafted conditional cancellation letter, just like it did here, every time that it's issuing a final removal decision. And if it does that, an employee is faced with a choice. I can either retire or I can challenge my removal decision. And
But it's not a binary choice. You're saying they have an either-or, but it's not.
If the conditional cancellation letter has the effect that the government would like it to have here, then it must be a binary choice. Because if the employee, like Mr. Jenkins, decides to retire, which he did, then the government turns around and says, no more removal. You can't challenge it any longer on the merits because it's gone.
Unless he can establish involuntariness in either of the two ways that everybody agrees are legally available avenues.
He could still, as he did here, assert involuntary retirement, but we believe that the two are not equivalent. Even though ultimately the relief he gets might be the same, Mr. Jenkins, to prevail on involuntary retirement, as the court well knows, has to overcome an adverse presumption of voluntariness. That's very different from simply challenging a decision on the merits, in which Mr. Jenkins would not have to face that extra jurisdictional hurdle.
Okay. Do you want to conclude?
We appreciate Your Honor's time. We would request that the board decision be vacated and remanded for a proper adjudication on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next case is Product Association.